Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
After days of protest and street violence that saw 1,200 National Guard members activated, Governor Tony Evers wants a law passed saying police must only use deadly force as a last resort. A finalist is recommended for the job of UW System President, but current President Ray Cross wants a special legislative session, and the state Supreme Court will decide whether to remove the names of 129,000 voters from the statewide voter list. Rewind, your week in review for June 5.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Busy week in Wisconsin in the wake of the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Protests throughout the state, some of them turned violent. When you go down State Street, you'll see boarded up businesses covered with art. And I asked the National Guard, 1,200 Guard members were deployed to help maintain order in five cities, Milwaukee, Madison, Green Bay, Kenosha, and Racine. In the middle of the week, Governor Evers asked that a bill, AB 1012, would be on his desk. He would sign it. Let's talk about what it would do. It would set a statewide standard that the primary duty of police is preserving life. Deadly force would be only a last resort. That officers must use, first, tactics to make it less likely that the situation would evolve to use force. Physical force would be used only to remove a safety threat. And officers who saw another officer committing unreasonable force would be obligated to stop it. Now, JR, before we hear from the governor and the response from Senator Van Wongard, there's a little problem. The legislature's out of session, and this was introduced after the ledge went home, correct?
Yes. Interesting note, the governor did not call a special session to deal with a bill. Now, remember, a governor can call a special session at any time, but governors cannot force legislature to act on that call. Still didn't do it. The legislature basically adjourned when the assembly left in March. They did do the special extraordinary session on the COVID-19 bill in April. The Senate could come in to finish up bills that were left hanging there from the spring, but it's not looking likely. This is more of a symbolic gesture from the governor to say, look, there's a problem. I'm paying attention to it. We need to do something about it.
And JR, you at WisPolitics, when you asked Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald and Speaker Voss to respond to the governor's query, let's pass AB 1012, have you still not gotten a response officially?
We heard from Van Wongard, some other Republicans kind of popped up, but mostly that leadership has been quiet about it. They're not going to take this bill up anytime soon. Granted, this time it was introduced after the legislature basically had adjourned with the assembly leaving. Okay. It also been introduced last session, didn't go anywhere. So Wongard says he's working on a bill and he will have something. We'll see what he comes up with, if he does have something that is workable. But there's obviously an issue that the governor wants to address. The question is, can he find a willing partner in the legislature to do it?
Okay, and before we get to Senator Wongard's response, because that's important, let's hear from a segment of the governor's four-minute, very emotional appeal on why this bill is needed and what he is calling institutional systemic racism. Please.
I'm calling on the legislature to immediately pass Assembly Bill 1012 that would reform our use of force policies by prioritizing preserving life and minimizing the use of force, and send it to my desk for signature. I'm also calling for local government leaders to join us in demanding change, and I'm asking for partners to step up in every corner of our state and put in the work that needs to be done. This legislation is an important first step, but we know the solution to racism isn't in one bill or one person. I know I don't have all the answers, no one does. This is on all of us together. We need systemic change to address the racism in our state and our country. We must be willing to face it with clear eyes and open hearts, recognizing that folks who look like me have been part of creating, exacerbating, and benefiting from the systems we must now turn to dismantle.
It's important, JR, to come back to what Senator Van Wongard said. Let's talk about the context. He's a retired Racine police officer, and he said, AB 1012, written by liberal activists who have never served with law enforcement and apparently never even talked or listened to them. For the governor to dictate to the legislature is neither productive nor bipartisan and divides at a time when we should be coming together. Just a P.S. on this, JR. I did a civil dialogue with the chair of the Black Caucus, LaKeisha Myers, and Jim Palmer, executive director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association. Palmer said he'd be interested in talking, in exploring getting this bill passed. But as you just said, JR, it's going nowhere, right?
No, and a P.S. to what Wongard said, the bill co-sponsors, Chris Taylor of Madison and LaTanya Johnson, I believe, of Milwaukee, kind of pushed back saying they had done their research on this. It's not just some bill written by activists, that this is a needed response to what's been going on. But again, we're just not seeing a meeting of the minds just yet. Question is kind of what might that look like? Not this session, but maybe next session.
Okay.
New topic.
The UW-Madison is a major research institution nationally. It gets hundreds of millions of dollars in research grants. It's a prestigious campus, always has been. But this week, the search committee looking for a replacement for President Ray Cross recommended one name, the president of the University of Alaska, Jim Johnson, one name only. Now, Mr. Johnson, since 2015, has overseen the University of Alaska with 30,000 students. But there's a lot of things that I want to talk about, JR. Other finalists, the press release from the UW system when it announced Mr. Johnson's name said other finalists had dropped out given the concerns about leaving their institutions in this time of COVID-19 pandemic. And here's one thing, JR. The governor announced three new regents. The next day, the search committee recommends Jim Johnson. My question is, I don't think any of those three new regents were at all plugged into the search process and may or may not like him as the next president of the UW system. Your thoughts?
Well, let's break down this development on several fronts. First, the search process. The process itself was criticized up front because it mainly was regents and former regents. There were no faculty or staff involved in the search committee. That irritated a lot of the faculty. They were not part of the discussion. So now I have a process that was already criticized from the beginning that produces a single candidate. There was criticism from various sectors of the university community this week because there were, I think, two no confidence votes in his leadership at the University of Alaska at the time. Now, he was dealing with budget difficulties in Alaska when this is all going on, but there was that. Also, the dynamic of having one single candidate also has to be a white male, and what's going on in this time, that was a different look that people weren't very happy about. So you have that piece of it. You alluded to the piece about the regents. Even with the three new appointments from Governor Evers, it's still nine appointments from Governor Scott Walker, seven from Tony Evers, two other regents, one from Tech College Board, one Carolyn Stanford Taylor, the DPI superintendent, who was viewed as, you know, an Evers ally because he appointed her DPI, right?
Yes.
The point is, you're not going to have a changeover leadership to an Evers board until next year. Why is that important? Well, how does Jim Johnson, assuming he gets the job, how does he work with these Evers appointees to kind of build a relationship? Now, one silver lining for him, Evan Manny Deeds, which is an Evers appointee, was on the search committee that, you know, he backed him. So maybe there's a way for him to kind of thread that needle. Let's talk about, too, the other dynamics of this job. Republicans have complained for years about the system, right? There's this disconnect between GOP leadership in the Capitol versus the other in State Street. Republicans would have liked to seen kind of an outside-the-box appointment, somebody like a Mitch Daniels at Purdue, former Indiana governor, somebody from the private sector, come in and shake things up. So now you have a guy who's actually an academic coming in, oh, by the way, in a time of massive budget cuts possibly coming, Ray Cross's blueprint to streamline things in university post-COVID-19. This guy faces a series of challenges in this job, and it's not exactly set to be a peaceful relationship, not just with him and faculty, but with his board of trustees, unless he can win them over. Now, okay. How does he win them over without alienating Republicans who have to control the purse strings in the Capitol? That's a challenge this guy to walk.
Yeah, and you just alluded to the purse strings in the Capitol because there's a whole other dimension that we've got to get to. UW outgoing UW system President Cross asked for a special legislative session to give them the ability to bond, borrow money, and let them restructure the next academic year calendar. Now, I haven't heard any response from either the speaker or the majority leader. Have you, on whether that's likely?
No. The only thing I've seen, Steve Noss, a frequent UW critic, Republican from Whitewater, is against the whole idea of letting them bond. I just have not seen an embrace from the legislature to do this just yet. Now, maybe things will change. You never know. But I'm looking more for what's the cut going to be for the system. This is all said and done. Because remember, Governor Evers had a 5% cut to GPR appropriation or operations budgets that he put out a few weeks back, right?
Yep.
The system took the brunt of that cut.
Yep.
That's just the first whack for them. We're looking at a $2 billion drop in revenues according to the governor's administration from an early estimate. Where's that money going to come from? Well, UW system is not sitting pretty right now when it comes to how it's going to weather this financial storm. Oh, by the way, of all these kids off campus who are learning online, what's that going to mean for registration going forward? Are kids going to say, hey, I can stay at home, take virtual classes and avoid the room and board fees, save some money? What's this mean for struggling campuses like Stevens Point, for example? Right? What's going to happen post-COVID-19? There are a lot of challenges right now for that system.
Yeah, there are. Bottom line, Mr. Johnson shouldn't hire any moving company anytime soon, right?
I would not sign a long-term lease. Now, again, he has a chance to walk, to thread the needle and win people over. But, you know, you have Ray Cross as somebody who's an academic, but he built a relationship with Republican lawmakers time he's in office.
Yes, yes.
And he knew both how academia worked at UW and how the Capitol worked.
Okay.
Johnson's coming in knowing academia, but not the dynamic of the Capitol. How's he doing that front? It's going to really go a long way in how he performs this job.
Okay, next topic. A few months ago, the Supreme Court deadlocked 3-3 on whether to take this case over 129,000 names of potential movers on the statewide list of voters. Postcards were mailed to those 129,000, didn't respond. Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty said state law says you got to take those names off within 30 days. The commission has said, no, we think we've got longer time, up to 3 years. So why is this significant? Because 129,000 voters who, it must be pointed out, could still show up and register on November 3 is many times the margin by which President Trump won Wisconsin in 2016. That's my take, JR. Yours.
A couple of things to remember. There is a system that flags these voters for possibly moving. There are false positives in this system. At one time, we were at around 220,000 people who may have moved, not responded. Now we're down to 129,000 for various reasons. Like, for example, they mailed back the postcard or they went to the polls and re-registered a different address. So it's hard to know what exactly the universe is of people who are really in danger of being pushed off the rolls, who are legitimately registered and still the same address. Even if they're pushed off, they can still re-register the polls on election day. The thing, though, is you have to have the right identification and materials to get them on. So there's that hitch to it. Other thing to watch, Brian Hagedorn.
Yes,
he irritated conservatives just a few weeks ago with the stay-at-home case, right?
You bet.
In that first kick at this cat back in January, the court was asked by Will, please take this appeal directly. DOJ appealed the Ozaukee County judge's ruling to take these guys off the rolls immediately and to fine the commission and the Dem Poinkies in contempt. The court deadlocked 3-3 because Daniel Kelly, who was up in April, said, I'm not going to sit on a case in which could impact my election.
Yes.
Hagedorn voted with liberals not to take it. Now, at the time, his view is a procedural thing, right? Brian is a former appeals court judge. People thought, okay, he wants it to go the normal process, circuit court, appeals court, then the Supreme Court. Now we're back on the merits. Where is Brian going to fall? In talking to people this week, Kelly's not likely to be on this case. I mean, he's back on it, but he's not planning to be a factor in the decision because the briefing schedule is like 60 days.
Yeah.
Well, that takes us to the very end of Daniel Kelly's term. Maybe they can get a kick out of decision within a day of the final brief. Doubt that happens. So Kelly leaves July 31st. Jill Karofsky comes on. It goes from 5-2 to 4-3. Even if with Karofsky, the key is Hagedorn. Where does he fall? Is he still was a procedural thing 5 months ago? Now he's on the merits with his conservative brethren? Or has he really got a problem with the case on the merits and sides with liberals that he's the guy in the microscope right now.
Yeah, he really is. But this is a very important case, given the less than 23,000 votes that the President Trump won in 2016. It's very interesting. We have to stay with the court now and stay with the Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty, because they filed a petition which caught me by surprise. I didn't see this one coming. And it says that after reapportionment, redistricting maps are drawn in the wake of the 2020 census, any challenges they have asked would go directly to the state Supreme Court. They filed a petition. The court would directly decide lawsuits over the congressional district, the legislative district maps. And it was interesting when you and I read the petition, the timeline here, it said that because of the COVID-19 pandemic, all the deadlines for the census have been pushed back. And that petition said that lawmakers will not even get the raw data to begin drawing those boundaries by until mid-2021, which is a very short timeline to draw timelines for the November 2022 election. So, but you want to talk, JR, about why will Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty file this now, hoping to get a hearing this fall?
It's all about trying to get this case in front of the state Supreme Court, not the federal courts. A little history lesson here, okay? The past five decades, which is kind of the modern era of redistricting, more often than not, Wisconsin's maps have been fought over in the federal court system.
You're right. Go ahead. Excuse me.
In 2000, we had an example where we had split control then too. We had a Republican in the governor's office, Democratic state Senate, Republican state assembly. At the time, Democrats went to the federal courts and filed a lawsuit over redistricting because they weren't going to reach a deal on a map that covered the legislature, okay? There also was a separate suit filed with the state Supreme Court. At the time, the state Supreme Court said, look, we don't have an apparatus to deal with these cases, number one. Number two, the federal case is already pretty well advanced. We're going to defer to the feds. However, we're going to lay down markers saying that we think this belongs in state court, and we're going to go ahead and do a process to take care of these. Fast forward two decades, they never did the rule. In 2011, is a moot case because you had unified control of the governor's office, both houses of legislature were Republicans. They drew the maps. Now you're back in a situation where we're going to court. The question is, who's going to draw the lines? This rule process is about speeding it up for the state courts to make it easier for Republicans to get in front of the state Supreme Court. Why? You can file, under this proposed rule, you could file your lawsuit as soon as the Census Bureau is done, right? Usually you wait till they can't reach a deal on the maps, then file the lawsuit, or say, hey, they've tried. You have to try right now under this rule. You would just be able to do it right as the census material is done.
That's true. And let's look at a statement from a very busy man, Rick Essenberg, president of Will. We would not expect the Democratic governor and the Republican legislature to be able to agree on maps because we know that they never do. It's going to be necessary for the court to draw the maps. I want to come back to what you just said, JR. The Supreme Court decision, when it refused to establish a bright line standard for reapportionment and whether it's a legal partisan advantage, put the ball squarely back on the courts, and that's a big part of this Will petition, isn't it?
Yeah, and don't forget, the U.S. Supreme Court ruling about the partisan gerrymander that a three-judge panel declared about the maps from 2011, that said that's only about partisan gerrymanders. If you're talking about drawing lines, you can still have a federal court draw the lines. Here's the deal. It's a much, and even if this rule is approved and there's a lawsuit that goes to the state Supreme Court, the federal courts can still have a role, whatever map the state Supreme Court draws. It's a much different system, though, or dynamic, if the federal court is reviewing a map drawn by a state court versus the feds are drawing a map on their own, right?
Yeah.
Much different situation. Democrats want to go to federal courts because they already saw that gerrymand ruling with the 2011 maps. Republicans want the state Supreme Court because it's even after this change in August to Karofsky from Kelly, so it'll be a 4-3 sort of majority. They feel better about going there. Right. And, you know, then away we go. The courts will draw the maps. This question of who.
Okay. And I've been on the lookout, as of you, for some reaction from the Evers administration to this rule petition. I haven't seen it because I wanted to include it as part of the show. I haven't seen any reaction. Have you?
State Democratic spokeswoman ripped it that, you know, this is basically Republicans trying to stack the process in favor of Republicans. And that the will, I think the paraphrasing, like, the law, the will of the people should rule, not the will of Robin Bloss, the Speaker.
Okay, next topic. 5 p.m. Monday of this week was the deadline to file nomination papers for our 8 U.S. House seats in the ledge, and district attorneys. By my count, 223 filed nomination papers, and we'll get into, they may be invalidated later or thrown off the ballot, to run for Congress and the legislature. Two incumbent U.S. House members, 1st District Republican George Steyle, ending his first term, and 3rd District Democrat Ron Kind, the dean of the Democrats in our congressional delegation, face primary challengers, and I know you got a P.S. on that in a minute. 7 open state Senate seats prompted 35 to file nomination papers, 8 for the retiring seat of Senator Dave Craig, a Republican, 7 for the seat of retiring Fred Risser, 6 for the seat of retiring Republican Luther Olson, 13 open assembly seats drew 69 candidates. Only 2 senators, Republican Dewey Strobel and Democrat Bob Wirch of Kenosha, will be unopposed. 12 assembly incumbents unopposed. But now you've got an update on challenges that will be decided by the Wisconsin Election Commission next Wednesday, which Wisconsin and I will be covering. Please.
Yeah, so there was a deadline on Thursday at 4:30 to file challenge nomination papers. A half dozen candidates face challenges. That includes 2 in that first congressional district. 1, the Republican looking to challenge Brian Steyle. 1 of the Democrats. Basically, all these challenges allege various problems with the papers, whether it's an illegible date, somebody lives outside the district who isn't allowed to sign the papers, other deficiencies. And in each case, the person who filed the nomination papers is within, like for the most part, is within like a few signatures of the cutoff. So like for Congress, it's 1,000 minimum. For the Assembly, it's 200. So anytime you turn in like 209, people look at your papers real closely. A couple of post notes. One Democrat being challenged, independent being challenged by the Democrats for Assembly seat, he is, according to the challenge, a convicted felon. Under state law in Wisconsin, you can't serve in the legislature as a convicted felon. So if that is, in fact, him on the CCAP records they produced, he's ineligible. In the 44th Assembly District, which is open, both Republicans and Democrats filed a challenge the same libertarian candidate to remove this person from the ballot for various deficiencies. So watch on Wednesday, see who is kicked off, if anybody. Also, I believe on Monday, they can file their responses to the challenges.
Yeah, and I think you reported 8 incumbent legislators face primary challenges, which include Rob Brooks, and a Republican, and Stash Grzinski in Green Bay, correct?
Is one. Yes. Obviously, Stash is accused of an off-capital, off-site incident. We're seeing more of these primary challenges kind of popping up. The question is, are any of these candidates really real? Will they have an infrastructure behind them? And will they be able to raise the money to mount a credible campaign?
Right. And the Election Commission, which Wisconsin and I will be covering, as will WisPolitics, will be deciding these challenges in a Wednesday meeting. Okay, JR, I don't normally include economic forecasts from the Department of Revenue because you and I have been watching them for, decades. But this one was especially dire. And I'm including it because it said Wisconsin employment will decline 14.4% this year, 2020. Wisconsin is expected to lose 626,000 jobs between the first and third quarter. Wisconsin personal income growth, which I think was 4% last year, which was pretty good, will slow to 0.2% this year, 1.6% in 2021. Now the caveats in that economic report. Loss of wages, other income will be significantly affected by the CARES money coming from Washington, the additional $600 per week for unemployment benefits through the end of July. But it also included this caveat: there's heightened uncertainty in projecting the future of Wisconsin's economy because no one knows the evolution of the pandemic, public health guidance, and the response in consumer behavior. So Speaker Voss, however, when he commented on this, said the report also says the economic recovery, jobs will return to pre-COVID-19 levels by 2023. That's a ways out. Now, JR, I know today The U.S. Labor Department said our jobless rate actually dropped from 14.7% to 13.3%. President Trump is doing a victory lap. Also, the number of jobs nationally had been expected to go drop even further, but the Labor Bureau of Labor Standards reported an increase of 2.5 million. And then I'm also done, JR. This is a week that World Dairy Expo was canceled, Summerfest was canceled, and remember, the State Fair is canceled. So the implications of this economic forecast for spending in the next fiscal year and quickly.
Oh, not great. And the other question is, what's this recovery going to look like? Is it going to be a U or a V?
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And that's what, you know, today's federal numbers, it suggests a quick snapback starting. But that's only 1 month. What's it going to look like next month and the month after that? We really don't know. It's a challenge to forecast these things right now. I mean, honestly, they were off by, what, 10 million jobs? Economists were picking a loss.
Yes. Yes.
Of 8 million, the gain 2.5 million. I mean, that's, that's way off.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for what it's worth, keep an eye on the next coming months. But if politically, if the jobs come back quicker than we think, it's much better for Donald Trump if they don't.
Right. But this economic report, and whenever we get the next projections of GPR tax collections, will determine any cuts or how significant a cut's going to have to be made in the spending year that begins July 1. Okay. Time for your stock picks. Go.
All right. So rising state bar. There was a challenge filed by two attorneys in Wisconsin, including Adam Jarko, former public lawmaker, to mandatory bar dues, saying that they basically are forced to support bar activity they don't like. U.S. Supreme Court said we're not going to take the case. So basically upholds a system that's been in place for years and years, mandatory dues and membership. Interesting note, the reason that Jarko and his fellow attorney challenged this was, remember, the Supreme Court just 2 years ago ruled that you can't have mandatory union fees for union dues for public employees, right?
Right.
They're saying, hey, if you can't force those guys to do it, how can you force us? Supreme Court took a pass to really address the merits of the case.
Okay. Mixed.
Scott Fitzgerald. So look, he's still the heavy favorite for the next congressman from the 5th Congressional District. But one of the surprises in those filings from this week for nomination papers is a Cliff DeTemple, a Republican from Jackson, who's now running for Congress. I mean, give Mr. DeTemple credit. He got more than 1,000 signatures in the middle of a pandemic, which is no easy task. But people I've talked to don't know him. I mean, he's an unknown. I can't find donations on the state database, the FEC database to candidates. He is a political newcomer in every sense of the word. The question is, can he really mount a serious challenge to Fitzgerald? When I asked folks, as people kind of fell away in this process from running as Fitzgerald, they said, look, if you can find a well-known, wealthy person from the private sector who's from voter-rich Waukesha County or the city of Waukesha, and can write a big check as an outsider, you might have a combination to really challenge Fitzgerald. Well, I talked to Mr. Temple this week. He said he's put some money in the race. I don't write a big check. He's not from Waukesha, the border rich part of the district. Yes, he's an outsider, but he's not well known. And Fitzgerald has the benefit of having 1 foot in the establishment world, 1 foot in Trump world. So I just get the impression Fitz is still the heavy favorite to win that seat.
Okay, you only got 45 seconds on falling. Go.
Real quick, hey, look, no shock. Traffic is down. There's a report from UW looking at the drops because of the pandemic. Things bottomed out sometime in, I believe, right after the first stay at home order. We're talking like traffic cut in half. But why I'm bringing it up, it plays into what you talked about last week in your interview with DOT Secretary Craig Thompson. When traffic is down, revenues are down. That means we're going to have a problem with our finances for the transportation fund for too long.
Yeah, and just a PS on that. Transportation fund revenues, 52% of them come from the gas tax. But okay, we're almost out of time. Just a programming note, as I said, Wisconsin Eye and WisPolitics will be covering the Wisconsin Election Commission. And one of the shows Wisconsin Eye is going to do to set up the online state Democratic convention is I'll be talking to Wisconsin Democratic Party congressional chairs Monday afternoon. So look forward to that. I'm Steve Walders.
There's. And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for June 5.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life. with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.